Sometimes there's a paradigm shift in science when a visionary thinker takes accepted beliefs into unprecedented directions. In the 20th century, that thinker was maverick physicist David Bohm. Discover the groundbreaking ideas of the man Albert Einstein called his spiritual son and the Dalai Lama has named his science guru. Sign up for a free online screening of the new documentary, Infinite Potential, The Life and Times of David Bohm. You'll never look at the world the same again. Visit unityonlineradio.org/freemovie.
All are welcome. We're glad you found us. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Eat better, get healthy, and help animals. Welcome to Main Street Vegan with your host, Victoria Moran.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Main Street Vegan program. I am your host, Victoria Moran. And if you listen often, you probably wonder why I just jumped right in and said, hey, because usually I do a nice thoughtful quotation introduction, but we're having all kinds of technical difficulties. Do you find that you have to allow about 20 minutes a day just to make time for those? That's certainly the way it is in my world. In any case, I very, very much welcome you to today's program. You know, I was going to give you the beautiful philosophical quotation at the very beginning, but I'm going to do that right now. It's actually a quotation from a wonderful new book called Homo Ahimsa. Because, you know, maybe we haven't done such a great job at Homo sapiens. Maybe it's time for us to become Homo Ahimsa, with a focus on harmlessness and reverence for life. And this is the book from today's second scheduled guest, Judy Carman. And she writes, this is, at its deepest roots, a spiritual movement. Many people have rejected or lost interest in formal religion because it has been complicit in much of the devastation we face today. But spirituality transcends organized religion. It is a metaphysical and mysterious impulse that visits us and moves us to say no to the status quo that causes so much suffering, pain, and violence. So I think we all agree that we can get in that line and stand up alongside Judy Carman and say no to some of that stuff that is no longer working and usher in a beautiful new world. And my first guest is someone, yes, indeed, Dr. Mills, I'm about to introduce you. Okay, is Dr. Milton Mills, who has been doing that for his entire career as a medical doctor, as a human rights activist, as a proponent of rights for animals and the sacredness of the earth. He's a frequent guest on our program and one of our favorites. And he's actually here today along with Judy Carman because we were going to be talking about the Vegan Spirituality Conference that was to have happened in September of 2020. But, you know, a pandemic came along. So that is now going to be happening in October of 2021. And I'm still going to be talking to these two magnificent people today. Welcome, Dr. Mills.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure to have you. So many people have been sending me questions to ask you. I'm not even sure we're going to get through them, but let me just jump in. The first question came from Jamie, and she is asking, what do you know about the latest COVID research?
I'm not sure what she's referring to when she says latest COVID research. I have not seen anything startling or new outside of there's been research that shows that children older than 10 years old can spread the virus as efficiently as adults. There are, of course, studies that are showing that some very young children can get a highly inflammatory type reaction that mimics a syndrome in children that I believe is called Kawasaki syndrome. But aside from that, I'm not sure what she is alluding to.
I think we've been on COVID overload for so long, and we just all want to be doing the best we can, keeping ourselves safe, keeping our families safe. And it's become a full-time job for a lot of people. So, and you addressed this so beautifully when you were with us in the early spring. You were actually the first physician we had on talking about immunity and COVID and all that kind of thing. So I refer people to that interview, and we will definitely put that in the show notes at mainstreetvegan.net. So I have another question here. This one comes from Kate in London, and she is asking, is there any evidence to show that diet and lifestyle can help to treat or prevent serious mental illnesses such as bipolar, or can they help to offset any genetic propensity for it? Is it the same as other diseases where we're told that genetics loads the gun, but lifestyle fires it?
Well, that is actually a very interesting and of course, important question. And the simple answer is that yes, there is evidence that diet can affect mental functioning. I don't know. I personally don't know of specific research addressing specific diseases such as bipolar disease or schizophrenia. That is not to say that research isn't there. I'm just saying I don't know of it specifically. But what I am aware of is that there is a large amount of research that shows that people who are plant-based are less susceptible and have lower rates of things like depression, anxiety, disorders, and some other mood disorders. There is research that has been done in lab animals where they have shown that diets high in animal foods create toxins in the intestine that, when absorbed, can actually interfere with the ability of central nervous system cells called oligodendrocytes to make the insulation that neurons need to function properly. So as I was saying, that the research in the lab animals that showed that these intestinal toxins that come from feeding the animals a lot of animal protein correlate with behaviors that would be consistent with depression, anxiety disorders, and things like that in human beings. And then the third leg supporting this kind of evidence is that there have been several instances where prisoners who were confined to a specific institution were put on plant-based diets, and they found that violent types of behavior and went down significantly. The prisoners were they were easier to deal with. They, again, had fewer issues with conflict amongst themselves. So there was a definite change in their personal mood and behavior. And there is a institution called the Judge Rotenberg Center, I believe it's in Connecticut, where it's a living facility for teenagers who have, again, severe behavioral issues such that they can't function at home or in school, and so they are sent to this facility. And they have years ago adopted a plant-based diet for their kids, and they've reported again that the levels of problems and behavioral issues that they have with the students went down significantly, and that's one of the reasons that they adhere to this type of diet. So there are, as I want to say, multiple lines of research showing efficacy in that area. I'm not sure if anyone has done placebo-controlled double-blind studies looking at these things, but the fact that I'm not aware of it doesn't mean that they don't exist. It's just that that's not an area that I typically research excessively. But the bottom line is your diet can have a significant impact on behavioral issues.
Aha. Thank you so much. And we have a caller. George, welcome to the program. George?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Do you have a question for Dr. Mills?
Yes, I did have a question. I thank him for his frontline service and all that he does for the vegan community. But the main question is, I don't understand how Dr. Mills spews all the hate on the websites that he has and the different Facebook accounts. So if he could address that, I would appreciate it.
I didn't understand the question. Vicky, Victoria, can you repeat?
Yeah, I think he's talking about some of the acrimony that appears on Facebook and how that affects you. And I do need to get in a word here for Unity Online Radio, because this is a church station and a nonprofit. We can't get political, but maybe Milton, you can just say something about social media and how we can all be nice.
Well, I mean, social media is a place where people go to express various opinions about a variety of things. And some of those opinions deal with political issues. And when people are discussing political issues, particularly in this current environment, sometimes things can become very emotional, because I can speak personally about these things as an African-American person, given the type of political rhetoric that is coming out of this current administration. I frequently feel threatened, absolutely threatened, not only for myself, but for my loved ones and friends who are also persons of color. And it is very upsetting when those kinds of concerns seem to be dismissed or minimized by people who are not persons of color. And so, you know, those discussions can get, as I said, quite emotional and sometimes heated, but I'm not sure what else I can say beyond that in answer to that question.
Thank you, Dr. Mills, and thank you, George. Thank you for your call. We do have a question from... Yeah, bless you. Take care. From Chris in Atlanta, and she is asking about what people of color can do to advocate for their own health, such as getting tests from their primary care physician.
Well, again, that's a really general question, but I think what is true for persons of color is true for everyone. And the first thing is to realize that when it comes to your health, each individual has to be the person that takes primary responsibility for that. And I will sort of give an anecdote to explain this. A good friend of mine has a family member who has poorly controlled diabetes right now, and to the point where this person has been admitted to the hospital recently for some problems stemming from the diabetes. And she encouraged her family member to adopt a plant-based diet. The family member broached that topic with his physician, and the physician said, well, I don't think that there's any, essentially dismissed it and said that he didn't see any value in it or think that it was a good idea. Well, anyone who has been paying attention to the research on how diet impacts diabetes and other chronic ailments knows clearly that diabetes can help reverse type 2 diabetes and can and help even those with type 1 diabetes obtain and maintain better control of their disease, which will minimize long-term risks and lengthen their life. The fact that the doctor is unaware of that research should not dissuade someone from pursuing what has been shown again and again to be a helpful way to eat and live, and a way in which you can help, as I said, correct diabetes and minimize its long-term effects. And the bottom line is that it's the individual with the diabetes who is going to be at danger for having premature heart disease, premature strokes, limb amputations, kidney damage, and possibly going blind from the effects of poorly controlled disease. So you can't let a doctor's unwillingness to address these issues dissuade you from pursuing them. And I always encourage patients that when you talk to doctors, if they tend to dismiss your inquiries about diet and disease, you should ask them, well, do you have any research showing why these things are not effective? Because you can tell them very clearly, I want to practice evidence-based medicine. Therefore, if you're telling me that this is not something I should do, can you give me some research that supports your view? And the doctor, if they can't do it, then that shows you that their opinion is not an informed opinion, and I would look for another physician. There is, PCRM does have a app out that helps people find plant-based physicians in the areas where they live. I would contact PCRM at PCRM.org to ask about that app so that you can find a plant-based practitioner in your area who would be better able to guide you on this topic.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I know, Dr. Mills, we're asking you like everything. It's almost like, you know, Encyclopedia Britannica. So I appreciate your answering so many diverse questions. And I understand that your specialty is one thing, but you also have information on so much else. So now we have a question from Alyssa, who says, what about plant-based eating and inflammation? And she's talking about in terms of tendonitis. And she's also asking if it's really important to be whole foods vegan 100% of the time, or if you eat plenty of fiber and fruits and vegetables, can you indulge in some processed food?
Well, there's no question that being, 100% a whole food plant-based is the best diet for the best outcomes. And there's also no question that plant-based diets, the research shows, I mean, there are literally mountains of research that show that plant-based diets, healthy plant-based diets, I should say, markedly reduce inflammation and can help treat things like tendonitis and other forms of inflammation. That's one of the reasons that so many professional sports players now are turning to plant-based diets, because they have found that it not only does it help them with their energy level, with their performance and stamina, but it all, because of the anti-inflammatory components in the diet, it cuts down on their recovery time. It helps with the muscle soreness, with the recovery from exercise, because it markedly reduces the inflammation that comes from vigorous exercise, and can absolutely help with things like tendonitis and so forth. It has also been shown to help with allergic type syndromes. There's a movie on Netflix called Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead, about a gentleman who had this really severe inflammatory syndrome that he was able to reverse completely by adopting a plant-based diet. So and as far as can you do a little bit and be okay, that's number one. That's not a question that I can necessarily answer, and the reason is some of these it's like poison ivy or poison oak. I think people who have experienced that problem know that the first time you get it, you may only get a mild outbreak, but that if you come in contact with even just a brush against the plant, a very small exposure, you get a massive systemic outbreak all over your body, because the inflammatory reaction is mediated by the immune system. And therefore, the amount of inflammation is disproportionate to the actual exposure. And the same thing can be true with animal foods, that that even a small exposure can trigger massive amounts of inflammation in the body. And so the best thing to do is to avoid these things altogether. Now, she mentioned processed foods, and I'm not, again, that's a huge topic. But if someone is saying, if I become vegan, can I never have a piece of cake or, some kind of dessert or something that was made with, say white flour as opposed to whole grain flour? No, if you keep the animal foods out of your diet, which are the real triggers for the inflammation, an occasional piece of cake or an occasional dinner roll that's not made with 100% whole grain flour will be okay. But again, it's going to have to do with the preponderance of what you're eating.
I see. Thank you so much. So I see, we're down to our last 4 minutes, and I want to ask you something that is really one of your signature areas. In fact, you just taught an amazing class on it for the current Main Street Vegan Academy, your signature talk. People can find it on YouTube, Are Humans Designed to Eat Meat? But let's just say there was no clinical or ethical or environmental or religious rationale for dietary choices, and we were going to base them 100% on anatomy and physiology. In our last 2.5 minutes, what would we choose and why?
Well, if you're looking purely at what human beings are anatomically designed to eat and what our physiology tells us about how our body responds to what we eat, you would absolutely stick to a fully plant-based diet, because from an anatomical standpoint, human beings are designed like committed plant eaters in terms of our jaw structure, our swallowing mechanism, the structure and length of our digestive tract, and also the function of our large intestines. When you look at our physiology, it's clear that plant foods help decrease inflammation, help boost immune function, and lower the risk for all sorts of chronic diseases. Whereas animal protein, when consumed by adults, turns on cancer genes, it turns on pro-inflammatory genes, it creates, as I said, a lot of toxic compounds in our colon. And one of the reasons that happens is that animals designed to eat animal food, and that includes the true omnivores, all have very short intestinal tracts, and especially short colons. And that's because by the time any protein residue reaches the colon where bacteria live, it has no nutritive value and needs to be eliminated from the body. If it's kept inside a warm, moist interior for too long, it causes all sorts of toxins like ammonia, hydrogen sulfide, and several other toxic compounds to be created by bacteria, which can be absorbed and then, as I mentioned earlier, interfere with structure and function of the central nervous system. It ramps up inflammation, which increases the risk for dementia, depression, anxiety, and so forth, as well as accelerates chronic diseases like heart disease and promotes cancer development. So
let's stop before they cut us off.
Okay.
Dr. Mills, I'm so fond of you and have such admiration for you. Thank you so much for yet again sharing your expertise with us on the Main Street Vegan program. Everybody else, stay with us through these messages and we'll be back with Homo Ahimsa.
We're glad you found us. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome back to Main Street Vegan with your host, Victoria Moran.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for being with us today. And I always invite everybody who listens to check out my website, mainstreetvegan.net. And there's some cool stuff going on there right now. There's a slider right on the homepage that talks about a free Zoom class happening in September that's going to be how to go vegan, how to go plant-based in no time at all. So if you find that of interest, or if there's somebody in your world who could use that, you can sign up for that. Then we're also having a retreat. Now, it's going to be at home. It's going to be on Zoom like everything else, and yet it's going to be so delicious. This retreat is called Acing Age with Ayurveda. That's going to be happening September 26th and 27th of 2020. And you can get all the information if you just click there on that slider, or you could just go to tinyurl.com/acingageretreat, A-C-I-N-G, age retreat. And you actually will get a discount on that if you are a listener of the podcast. So when it says, do you have a discount code? You just put in P-O-D, pod for podcast. And I hope that you'll be joining us with all these wonderful wisdom and great self-care from Ayurveda. We're going to have so much fun and learn so much, and who knows, maybe get a little bit younger. So one of my great friends, you know, that's a way to stay younger, have lots of wonderful friends, happens to be my guest in the second segment. She is Judy Carman, MA. She's the author of the book we've been talking about, Homo Ahimsa, who we really are and how we're going to save the world. Judy is also the author of Peace to All Beings, which has the sweetest subtitle of Veggie Soup for the Chicken's Soul. She's the recipient of the Henry Spira Grassroots Animal Activist Award and founder of the Animal Peace Prayer Flag Project. She is co-founder of Animal Outreach of Kansas, Worldwide Prayer Circle for Animals, and Interfaith Vegan Coalition. Welcome, Judy Carman.
Thank you, Victoria. It's great to be here. And hi, everybody. This is just, like you said, so wonderful to be with friends. And we're all friends here. And there's just so much to share. And I just really appreciate your inviting me. And I do want to tell everybody, yes, please go to Main Street Vegan and see all the amazing things that Victoria is doing. It's, I don't know how you're getting all this done, but it's,
you know, I think
amazing.
That about everybody. You know, when I introduce people on this program, it's like they're doing this and this and this. But I do think we have a lot of energy because of the way we live. And we also have a lot of energy because we're on fire for this cause. You know, we really want people to see what we see. And you do that beautifully as an author and as an activist. So just give us the abbreviated version of how you got to be vegan.
Okay. Short version. I, of course, like many of you, maybe everyone listening in, I loved animals as a kid, but I didn't understand that we were eating animals when mom was serving meat on the table. It took me till I was about 10 years old to really make that connection, and then I didn't know what to do. I didn't really, I'd never heard the word vegetarian. I didn't know there were people who didn't eat meat, and so I tried not to eat meat, and so I lived on donuts, which I finally realized there's not a lot of nutrition there, and Frosted Flakes as well. So I got pretty sick, and then I thought, well, I guess people are right. You do have to eat meat. So I did until I was an adult, and then I started learning and about vegetarianism. And there were a few cookbooks, not very many. Back then, this was back in the 60s and 70s, and as we all know, there are now thousands of cookbooks, vegan cookbooks, and books with vegan information and ethics and all that wonderful stuff now. But back then, there wasn't much.
No, so, pickings were slim.
yeah.
And so, now it's not only cookbooks. Sometimes when I don't have a lot of groceries left, and I'll just Google like vegan or maybe vegan oil-free or whatever I'm into that day, cabbage, carrots, lentils, if that's all I got.
Because that's what's
and
in the fridge.
There'll be like 50,000 recipes just with that stuff in it.
It's amazing. Yeah, we didn't have the internet back then either. So, but we did learn. And then, of course, I still was vegetarian. I didn't know about veganism, had not heard that word until later on. And then I started seeing the conditions that animals, cows and chickens, were enduring for eggs and dairy products. And once I really understood that and took the blinders off, I said, oh, okay, so now I'm vegan. And that was about, 25 years ago or so. So I have been vegan for quite a while, and vegetarian probably, I don't know, 20 years before that. So, but it has, like Milton was saying, it does make a difference, the quality of the food you eat. And so I have learned over the years how to eat whole foods and whole plant-based healthy food, and that makes a big difference. So
it does indeed.
Yeah. But
so
yes, it takes time.
Let's move into your book, because, it's hard to write a book. I'm trying to get the inspiration for number 14 for me. And, I have a lot of false starts, and you've really done a beautiful job with this one. But I want to ask you, I'm going to ask you about the title second. I'm going to ask you about the subtitle first. So your subtitle is so positive. And I mean, this is Unity Online Radio, all about positive. But oh my goodness, you say who we really are and how we're going to save the world. Not how maybe kind of sort of with some luck. So do you really believe that we're going to be able to pull this off?
Well, I do. And I just, there's so many factors involved in my optimism. And one of them is Unity and many other people that are spiritually oriented, that are sensing an actual rising of consciousness that's happening now, a sense among people that something's shifting, something major is happening for us spiritually, and that we are getting divine assistance. And part of it is, it's kind of, in an ironic way, really, because we've run out of time. And so we've got to move fast. We've got to open ourselves up to who we really are, which is not the Homo sapiens that has just devastated this planet. That we actually are capable, and Unity has been wonderful at teaching this, we are fully capable of being beings of love. And that's why we're here, and that is our superpower. And so we're doing it. And there's many people already that I would call Homo Ahimsas now. Ahimsa means non-harm in Sanskrit. And so, but it has a much broader meaning than that for people in the Jain religion, which started the Ahimsa vow. And Gandhi took that vow. And it basically means non-harm, but it goes beyond that to mean abstaining from any animal products, as well as not harming any animals and having reverence for life. And also mastery over yourself, which is another thing that Unity teaches, and mastery over our thoughts, and not allowing, or that's not the right way to phrase it, but learning to sort through the many thoughts that come floating through our minds and choosing. We know now that we can choose. We don't have to be violent. We can choose to be kind and loving. And when we do that, we are in sync with our true nature.
So what happens, Judy? You talked about this true nature, our true loving nature. So how does that change our relationship to animals and nature?
Yeah, good question. And what it does is, I think that a lot of us that have been on a spiritual path for a long time have thought mainly about our own spiritual path, being kind to other people, living by the golden rule, you know, doing our very best to help others and all that, but not extending it out to the animals of the world and to the earth. And what I'm seeing now is this great evolving consciousness of, wait a minute, this golden rule doesn't just apply to people. That wouldn't make any sense, because all these other beings are here, and the trees and the flowers, and they're all here just blessing us with their amazingness. You know, just listening to frogs singing at night, you're just like overwhelmed with the beauty of nature. But I think there's been that kind of disconnect where it's the golden rule and all of these spiritual teachings have only applied to people, and it's like there's a big barricade there. And that door is opening now, and people are seeing what's really happening to animals and seeing what Homo sapiens has done to the earth and the animals. It wasn't done by alligators and dogs and wolves. They did not do the damage to the earth that we're seeing all around us. They did not bring us to this brink of the sixth extinction and all of the terrible things as far as pollution in the ocean and air pollution. They didn't do any of that. Homo sapiens did that, and that is why I say, hey, truly, we are not that. We are Homo Ahimsa. We have the capacity to ascend beyond that mindset of domination and of being the center of the universe, as if we could do whatever we want to with the other beings, And that includes people who are, you know, compromised in many ways. People, for example, who work in slaughterhouses, who are very marginalized and have very few rights and are being terribly discriminated against and exploited. And also people who work in the farm industry. So anything we do, I think what we're seeing now is that anything we do that helps the animals, that liberates the animals, that ends animal agriculture altogether, will also help all these people who have been marginalized. And there's also many people who are living in areas, for example, where Tyson has set up these gigantic chicken factories and polluted the whole area with the air, the water, and made people sick all around there. These things are happening, and those people are suffering along with the chickens. And so the obvious, very logical idea here is, let's not eat chickens, let's not eat eggs, and Tyson will have to find it something else to do with their time.
Right, and they're already investing in plant-based foods. I mean, the word is out in the meat industry. Mm-hmm. They know that plant-based is the wave of the future. I think it is frightening for people who are in these industries to hear you say, you know, we're going to get rid of them. But it's not like, you know, going in and bulldozing them. It's this idea of change in the marketplace and change in what people want to eat, and also offering our support to them. Because the way I look at it, nobody was a kid in middle school saying, boy, I can hardly wait to get out of here so I can kill animals for a living. I mean, people are in these jobs because they're the jobs available. And right now we have, for example, the Boycott Meat campaign. If people want to check that out, it's just boycottmeat.com. And this is a lot of people who are interested in animals and the earth, and who are also stepping up to support the slaughterhouse workers who are getting COVID at these alarming rates. So as much as we think we can't all work together, you know what? I think we can, especially as we evolve towards Homo ahimsa. But what I want to ask you, Judy, is it's taken millions of years to get to Homo sapiens. So we don't have a lot of time to make it from here to Homo ahimsa. So what do we do?
Well, I think that the great thing is that we don't have to change ourselves. We just have to realize who we really are. And I think a really good question to ask people is, would you ever on purpose harm an animal? Nearly 100% of people would say, of course not. I would not do that. And that, the I guess the conclusion, you could call it, there would be, well, then you are really vegan in your heart. And so it's just another step to, and I shouldn't say just vegan, because that, of course, that implies nonviolence, but you're already homo ahimsa in your heart, because you are not wanting to be violent. But what so many people don't realize is that they're paying other people to be violent, horribly violent to these poor animals who have done nothing to harm us, and who now, because of there are so many of them, the number of wild animals keeps plummeting, and so many animals are becoming extinct. But I think all of this information is coming out, and so that's another reason for my optimism, because people are paying attention. They're seeing there's some really bad things happening in the world, and I want to do something about it. And what's so exciting and positive is that going vegan, eating plant-based, just that one thing is probably a million times more powerful than taking shorter showers. And so, and then all the other things that come along with it, once you realize vegan is so much more than just what you eat. It's also how you live in a nonviolent way, which applies to how you interact with people and animals. But to go back to your question, I think that a big part of what we all are facing as we do reveal our true nature to ourselves and others is that we have got to peel away the layers of programming that have been a big part of our lives, churches, schools, our parents who were also programmed, all these people who didn't know any better. We were all raised in underneath a worldview that it is okay for us to dominate anyone who appears to be weaker than we. And that is not right. That we know that now. That is not cool. And but it's amazing. And as we're all learning more about racism, we're being asked to look within and look at, well, do we have some racist attitudes? We think we don't, but maybe we do. Look deep. And so I think that we're in that place right now, spiritually, to look deep within at all the things that we've been taught and really question deeply. If somebody says something and we have a knee-jerk reaction to it, say to yourself, instead of having that knee-jerk reaction to that person, say to ourselves, now, why do I have that? You know, who taught me that what they're saying is wrong? Or that I should, you know, argue with them or something. So I think that that's a really big part of this. And then also, of course, meditation and prayer and spending a lot of time in contemplation about where our ideas come from and how true are they really, and balance them off. Okay, is that thought that I just had a loving thought? And I think that that will help us a lot to make this transition and just understand that we have all been, as Will Tuttle says, we've all been wounded by our culture, and find those wounds and heal those wounds and be patient with ourselves and loving with ourselves as we go through this. But I think that's a huge part of what our work is to do, our spiritual work right now, is to question all this programming that we have endured for centuries.
Yes, and also to read Homo Ahimsa. I just wanted to share with people that your book has a lot of fans. It's brand new, and it already has a lot of fans. And one of your endorsers was actually a guest on this program last week, and that's Dr. Richard Schwartz, Professor Emeritus of Jewish Veg. And he said, Homo Ahimsa has the potential to have the kind of transformative impact that Rachel Carson's Silent Spring and Francis Moore LePay's Diet for a Small Planet had. I very strongly recommend it, as do I. So do take a look at that. And, of course, we'll have a link on the show notes at mainstreetvegan.net so you can get yourself right to Amazon and purchase Judy Carman's wonderful book. I also want to ask you, Judy, about some of these other things you're involved in just in our last few minutes. So tell me about the Interfaith Vegan Coalition. I know that's a real child of your heart. So what does the IVC do and how can people get involved?
Yeah. I think that the notes will have the link to that. And Lisa Levinson and Thomas Jackson and I founded that a few years ago with the idea of reaching out to places of worship and bringing them the vegan message, basically, the ahimsa message, that especially places of worship have been teaching the Golden Rule or some form of it for all these years and yet not expanded it out to include animals and the earth. So that's our job, and we have lots of kits, on advocacy kits on the website, and they're for different religions. We're still hoping to get more for different religions that we haven't got yet. But you can look at those if you are, say, a Christian or a Jain or a Buddhist. There's a kit there that you can look at and get some ideas of films to show to your group, which one of them is Thomas Jackson's film, which Victoria is the producer of, and it is absolutely amazing and definitely something everyone should watch. But so that's one of, obviously, one of the things that we recommend. And then, of course, people, after they watch that film, can form compassionate living circles, and Thomas has a lot of information on that, and so does the Interfaith Vegan Coalition. So, and we also do things like responding to current events, such as, let's say, a church that's sponsoring a rodeo where animals are harmed, and we contact the church with letters and phone calls to try to help them see that that is not in line with their true values of kindness and love. So
that's so beautiful. And you do it with such grace. And you are a homo ahimsa person, Judy Carman. And thank you so much for all your wonderful work. And for this beautiful book, thank you for the shout out to the film, A Prayer for Compassion. People can watch that on Vimeo and Amazon Prime if they have the inclination to do that. Thanks, everybody, for listening today. Thanks for being part of the Main Street Vegan family. And you know what? We're going to see you guys next week. In the meantime, God bless you. Eat your veggies.
Thanks for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world. Sometimes there's a paradigm shift in science when a visionary thinker takes accepted beliefs into unprecedented directions. In the 20th century, that thinker was maverick physicist David Bohm. Discover the groundbreaking ideas of the man Albert Einstein called his spiritual son, and the Dalai Lama has named his science guru. Sign up for a free online screening of the new documentary, Infinite Potential, The Life and Times of David Bohm. You'll never look at the world the same again. Visit unityonlineradio.org/freemovie.